Mazzola, Director Del Carlo, Director Dunlop.
Here.
Director Elberling, Director Samaha.
Here.
Director Sen.
Here.
Supervisor Kim. We have a quorum. Item number two, general public comment.
Again, as is the case here, I want to welcome all of you to this meeting of the Treasure Island Development Authority. And this is your chance. We welcome your presence here and your comments. And so for items that are not on the agenda, we would like to hear from you, each and every one of you that has a desire to speak here. So we welcome your comments. So next, you see, sir, go ahead.
Thank you. Directors, my name is Larry Baskin. I live in San Francisco, and I have a boat on Treasure Island, and I represent myself. And I wanted to call attention to a recent access problem for boaters that occurred in November when the Navy dredged and then dumped a bunch of dirt in Clipper Cove that has now clogged the channel. Prior to November, this wasn't really an issue except at low tide. Now it's an issue for about a third of the month. It seems to me that the channel of Clipper Cove is part of the Treasure Island infrastructure, same as access roads, water, sewer system, etc. If you rent an apartment on Treasure Island, rent a business there, and something happened, the road washed out, you would expect it to be fixed. As a tenant of Treasure Island Marina, I expect that the channel should be maintained.
No, sir, this is a public comment, and this item is not
commenting publicly, and that's the question I have to the directors of the Treasure Island Authority. If you can't specifically ask that question, I ask that you ask the TIDA staff to investigate who's responsible for maintaining the channel and report back to me at the next TIDA meeting. I've talked to the Navy, who will gladly facilitate the permits to have the channel plowed at approximately $20,000 to solve the immediate problem. The Vortex Marina have an estimate from them. In the future, I understand that I've been with this for so long, I'm losing a little bit of enthusiasm because I'm supposed to be developed with the new marinas, new dredging. So ultimately, I think there's going to be a solution. But there's no solution now for all the boaters who are getting grounded, stuck in the mud, safety issues. And there's a very narrow area near the former Google Pier, I guess it's now called the TI Pier again, which is filled up with dirt since the Navy dumped all of that in there.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker.
Comment is about the 90-day notice, the use of the 90-day notice of termination of tenancy to relocate villages, households that will be displaced as part of the Navy cleanup. While the notice does not even refer the lease, it's contrary to the terms of the lease. It fails to give a legitimate reason to end the lease and thus wrongly invalidates the contract between the tenant. And I'm aware that this particular notice of January 14th has been withdrawn, but it's the use of a notice of termination of tenancy that I object to. And it's a mystery to me why the villages insist on using a notice of termination of tenancy when they can simply follow the existing lease, Section 19, Notice to Vacate, which states, last sentence, lessor may terminate this lease if any local, state, or federal agency orders the vacancy of the premises for health and safety reasons. Now, obviously, the Department of Navy letter sent to Director Saez on November 25th, 2013, stating that six buildings need to be, quote, vacated due to, quote, the Navy's environmental cleanup, unquote, would justify the use of a notice to vacate under Section 19 of the lease. So I'm wondering why the insistence on using a notice that terminates the tenancy and voids the lease and thus invalidates the lease. I wrote to Dan Stone, property manager of the Villages, as soon as I became aware of this notice, urging that the notice be withdrawn. I questioned whether the Villages had authority to abrogate the lease in this manner, which completely undermines the validity and enforceability of the lease. Unfortunately, I forgot to include a copy in the communication, so I asked Lorraine to distribute a copy of that letter to Dan Stone, the 14th letter. And I've yet to hear back from property manager Stone, so I'm asking the board to weigh in on an issue with serious policy implications, the unilateral, unwarranted, and unnecessary invalidation of the original residential lease. And I urge the board to encourage property manager Stone, directors Sias and Beck, not to invalidate the residential lease with a 90-day notice of termination of tenancy, and instead simply follow Section 19 of the lease and use a 60 or 90-day notice to vacate as required appropriately by state of law. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, sir, and we have each of the commissioners has your letter. Thank you. Next. Again, if you have not filled out a card, that's fine. You can come in and express your public comments. So are there any further public comments? None? Okay, all right. Thank you.
Item number 3A, report by Director of Island Operations.
Good afternoon. Over the following month. Here we go. Thank you. Under public safety, as reported by the Southern Station, there were no residential burglaries last month. That is down from the month prior with two. The monthly stats are found in tab 3, and the Southern Station newsletters are found in tab 4. These stats represent the best, the lowest incidence of crime on the island since we began reporting, and certainly the lowest since Captain Redmond's appointment. Other public safety issue and matters to report this month is with regards to Fire Station 48. Results from a recent commission mold survey of the facility have led SF Fire Department to make the decision to relocate Station 48 personnel and operations crew. The crew has moved out of the firehouse and over to the Fire Training Academy just three blocks away. We are greatly concerned about our fellow city employees' health, as well as equally concerned for the public safety of our residents. I want to make clear that this in no way compromises the response time for fire on the island. Response time in the event of a fire is negligible. We met with Chief Hayes and her staff to discuss these challenges and present, and we also discussed accommodating a temporary facility on the island. This afternoon, to provide you further information, with a little sleep this past evening, is Assistant Deputy Chief Ken Lombardi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Assistant Deputy Chief Ken Lombardi, San Francisco Fire Department. So what happened is we had some complaints from our members that there was mold in the building. So we had a contractor come out, a mold contractor recommended we get a consultant to come out. So the mold consultant wrote a report. The report said we have extensive mold damage, recommended we evacuate our people from the building before any construction would take place and before any mitigation would take place. So our immediate need was to move the people. We got the notification on a Thursday and we started moving them on Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning. So needless to say, we had no time to plan for this. We moved them over to our training facility, which is roughly three blocks away, and we're working out of there, and it's working fine. There's not going to be any impediment to any of the people that are on the island as far as fire security safety goes. However, for our members, it's not an ideal situation at all. I mean, we're living out of classrooms right now, and there's issues. But with that being said, Tida's been working with us, and we've looked at other buildings and other options, and quite frankly, I don't think any of those are going to work out after looking at them. So we'll probably be looking at temporary housing and the term of trailers or something, which takes a little bit of time to put together, but we'd be looking at that, and it'd be in the same area. So as far as the safety of the people on Treasure Island, that will never be in jeopardy. We're still there. We're committed to being there, and that's our first priority. But we also got to keep our members safe. So that's another one of our top priorities that we're worried about. So you may hear about this again, and I would just ask for your support. If they ask, you know, your opinion on it, just we need to get temporary housing out there. We're not in an ideal situation right now. So there's a lot of red tape, and anything you guys could do to help us get through that, to get this temporary housing in place, the sooner the better would be great. And I'm here to answer any questions if you have them.
Yes, yes, Mr. Bardi, thank you for your time and your presence here. As is the case, when anything related to health issues are brought to our attention, we move very quickly. And as you have stated, that the Tida staff and working with you to are trying to mitigate this on a temporary basis. For your viewers and people in the audience, we know that we still do not own the island. It's still owned by the Navy. And the Navy right now is undergoing remediation or whatever, and ultimately during the transition period is what we are trying to do to manage before they can go in for the real infrastructure and everything they need to do there. Yes, we will support you along the way to make it easier because we understand the importance of the safety of the residents and of you at the city staff. So we will yield to our staff to continue to work with you, and anything that we can do here, we are gonna do that. It's great that there is a temporary place, but we need to make it more habitable for the temporary things that needs to be done. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The Commissioner Dunlop?
Yes, I just wanted to take this opportunity as a resident of the islands to thank the fire department for all their great work that they've done and, you know, creating a safe environment for the residents of the island. And of course, we want our fire department to be living in a healthy environment themselves. So I'm sure we'll look into that and
great.
Be assisted.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I don't see any other commissioners, no. And we will entertain public comments after the director's report. So thank you, sir, for your
thank
time.
You.
Thank you. Continuing with regards to the housing RFQ, the staff issued this week the RFQ for housing management services, specifically to sublease and market our market rate rental housing. Deadlines for responses is Friday, April 18th. The issuance is required given that the current manager's sublease, that is with John Stewart, has expired and has exceeded 10 years. The evaluation selection process is expected to be completed by late April, and staff anticipates bringing forward presenting a negotiated agreement to the board for consideration in its May meeting. BCDC issues, staff did meet with BCDC to staff to resolve the issues over the Google barge at Pier 1. Thereafter, Tida issued a directive to the subleasee to indeed move that barge. Subleasee complied with the requirement, with the request and the time required of that notice, and thus resolving all the issues associated with BCDC. All those correspondence are found in tab 4 of your package. 311 service requests. As you know, we utilize 311's call center to report all types of deficiencies with regards to public works. It really has improved our accountability and really aid us as we go forward in putting together next year's budget. And it placed the responsibility, of course, indeed, into the responsible agency hands. There were 9 service requests in the month of February, 7 were closed, 2 remain. The majority of these calls related to street light repairs. Review of finances, the income and expense reports are distributed in part of your package. Revenue is reported at 64% of budget, expenses at 41%, well below the budget, and all city work orders are encumbered at this time. Budget projections for the end of the year indicate that the commercial revenues continue to grow, offsetting any anticipated losses in housing or JV revenue. Expenses have been maintained within the budget, while administrative costs in the last 8 months are well below. There was one unplanned expense to date that was associated with the engineering services of the ramps improvement project. Overall, revenue is projected to exceed budget, ending the year in a positive cash position. Under quality of life issues, the Department of Public Health Nursing Clinic is scheduled to open mid-April. Work continues at the gym to turn two rooms there into a clinic. The clinic is, the Department of Public Health is conducting a community outreach to assess the programs and the services that are desired by the community with the initial opening. A host of services might be provided there, including prevention like TB testing, flu shots, hepatitis vaccines, low urgent care needs like treatment for allergies and asthma and common colds. Also, there'll be linkages to the vision dental screening days and the mobile mammogram screening. Department of Public Health will strive to align all these services offered with the needs of the community and will monitor and adjust services offered as necessary and appropriate. The deadline for response for TIDA requests for emergency preparedness planning closed February 28th. Four firms submitted responses. The scope is to analyze the current emergency plans of our property managers and the community service organization. Staff expects to present a contract for approval at the April board meeting. In time for great weather, repairs to the tennis courts have been made to the satisfaction of our resident advocates. And lastly, in partnership with TIDI, we are conducting focus group meetings with the residents to inform us about after-school programming. This will help us also evaluate and select an after-school programmer for the next budget year. Leasing activities, as required, all waivers and at-cost agreements are to be disclosed and are found in tab 3 of your binder. Over the last month, this included waivers for the Treasure Island Museum, among others. There were 3 new leases and 14 permits signed since our last meeting. The increase in permits is a function of the TIDA staff now being directly responsible for the management of the CASA and the chapel venues. Filming activities this month included a television commercial with BMW. Under special events, the Department of Emergency Management held a tabletop exercise at the CASA last week as part of DEM's 2014 Tsunami Exercise Program. Over 100 participants from the city, the region, the state all participated. Representatives from TIDI, the Life Learning Academy, Job Corps, and our own SF NERT team also attended as observers. Huge crowds attended the flea market this past month. The flea market returns to the Great Lawn in April. The shout out today is to the Treasure Island Museum Association, who has been selected for the Art Deco Society 2014 Michael Crow Preservation Award in recognition of their association's work to help preserve the treasures of Treasure Island and its effort to reestablish the Treasure Island Museum. Team of Vice President Ann Sheedblin, sorry for that, Sheedblin, will receive a separate personal preservation award in tribute for her 25 years of dedication to the legacy of the Golden Gate International Exposition. Both awards are to be presented at the Art Deco Preservation Ball May 10th. The theme of the ball is indeed the Golden Gate Exposition's 75th anniversary. A reminder, next month is the on-island meeting. Agenda will include the 2014-15 budget presentation. Before I conclude today, Madam Chair, as I reported last month, KVIE Public Television Sacramento recently aired a segment on TI for their program called Rob on the Road. The program highlighted Treasure Island's growth as a recreation destination as part of a larger project focused on the islands of the bay. The program visited Treasure Island's special event venues, athletic fields, and multiple on-island wineries. Just in case you missed it, here's a brief introduction of that programming, and we'll send you the link for the 23 minutes of Rob on the Road at a later time.
Amazing spots on Rob on the Road, Islands of the San Francisco Bay.
And now, Rob on the Road, exploring Northern California.
Welcome to San Francisco Bay. Oh, this place is just beautiful, and it's a magnet for millions of tourists and locals every single year. Whether you want to just take a stroll along the shoreline or head out in the bay sailing, this is truly one of America's great playgrounds. Now, behind me is Alcatraz Island, home to the infamous federal penitentiary and the first lighthouse built on the West Coast. And here's Angel Island, the largest island in the bay. This California State Park is packed with hiking trails and spectacular sights. But let's begin right here on Treasure Island. This place is packed with history. And we purposely picked today, a weekday, where there wouldn't be very many tourists around, because this experience is for you. We're beginning with a hike to the top of the old San Francisco Airport Tower, now home to the Treasure Island Development Authority, and home to spectacular views.
Madam Chair, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that a great report. And I'm sure each of the commissioners would have comments. I want to start by, again, speaking about the crime statistics. I think all the teamwork approach that tie-dye, a police department, the staff, and a commission policy is the result of the dividends that we are having right now. In fact, the only thing reported has to do personal things that we do not have jurisdiction on, you know, domestic violence and all of that. And why am I saying this? Again, to convey to the public that we're everywhere doing all the best we are doing here to make sure that Treasure Island is a livable place for the residents there, and we are going to continue to make sure that we make it even more. So this is a, you know, great news. On BCDC, I again want to thank our staff for jumping in and working things out with BCDC, Mr. Bob Beck, Miriam Sias. Also want to thank the General Counsel, Mr. Sullivan, and Ms. Alicia Cabrera, the city getting involved. So there are no other issues now, and we're going to continue to strengthen the relationship with BCDC, because actually they are our regulatory partner for immediate and future development of the, you know, of the island. Also, on Department of Public Health, again, it's great news to us that now we're going to be having an opportunity for the residents to have our health care access on the island. We know we have children and we have access, so that is also a great news and information that we need to convey to the public. And it would be also great that some of the community partners we have can put this information on their newsletter, and we need to kind of broadcast it over and over and over until all the residents are involved. And lastly, for me, of the Museum Association, this is very wonderful. I think anything we can do to support the museum here, it's also great for Treasure Island, because they know about the history, they're trying to preserve the history, and all of these things will come together when to showcase what great this island is. And on the video we've just seen, I think this kind of video needs to be on our website. These are the things that speak for themselves, for the public to really know how great this island is, and they can see what is there now. They can envision what is going to happen when things happen. I know your presentation, you did not mention about the ramp, groundbreaking. It was a great event that was done. I see Mr. Cordova here, and it was a very fine event that now we've reached a milestone in trying to connect Yerba Buena Island to the rest of the world. I think things great are happening in the Bay Area. Mr. Cordova gave a history of Treasure Island that I had not seen anybody give that history before. That, you know, compilation of the data he gave, very well done and significant, that we may even need to revisit all those things when we are trying to compile here what the history of the Treasure Island. So, Mr. Cordova, I know you're in the audience, and thank you, sir, for your time here. So I'm going to yield to Mr. Dunlop.
Hi. I guess first, shout out to Ms. Samblin. It's awesome, and congratulations. And it is quite an asset to our island. I also just had a question. I guess there's nobody here from the police department, but is there anything specific thing that can be credited to the great crime stat?
Well, I think it was first of all, we have a great captain. Let's begin with that. And then secondly, the efforts between the community, Community Watch, SF Safe, everybody got involved to get people to understand what they need to do to protect themselves. And I think that has played a critical role in the stats bearing it out. There was also several arrests made that the captain reported on a couple months back. And I think we're just seeing the results of the combination of all of that.
That's really great news. And then also just a question on all the new health care. I just assume that, you know, the neighbors will be, the residents will be notified, and there's some sort of, you know, they'll all get to know. So
yes, they're doing community outreach right now, trying to be more informed about what the needs may be, and then thereafter DPH will take to be providing community outreach for notifying everything that will be available. Not quite there yet, but moving forward.
Great.
Thank you.
That Rob on the Road was so awesome. I just want to know, who was the actress playing your part?
I think it was Sandra Bullock.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioners, no, I don't see anything on the dial. At this point, I am going to ask for public comments on the director. No? Okay. So let's no comments for the comments for Mr. Bardis. Thank you, sir. So let's move on to Mr. Bob Beck's presentation, please.
Item number 3B, report by Treasure Island Director.
Thank you, members of the board. Continued this past month to coordinate with the Navy on its environmental remediation efforts on the island. A few items to report in that realm. This evening at 6:30 at the Casa de la Vista, the Navy will be holding a information presentation and workshop on their proposed plan for the work plan for Site 6 on Treasure Island. Site 6 is what used to be the Fire Training Academy on the island before the current Fire Training Academy was built. It lies between the residential neighborhood and the sewage treatment facility at the northeastern corner of the island. And so it's primarily a ground soil remediation project that they'll be proposing, and this will be their work plan. This is their proposed work plan for that area, and then they'll move forward from that into a remedial action plan, and then beyond that into the actual remediation effort. Also, we've been working again with John Stewart Company on the relocations to assist the Navy planned work in Suite AB, the solid waste disposal areas along West Side and Gateview, as well as the cleanup on Bayside and North Point. Last week, the Navy advised us that they need to continue to work with their contractor on their work plan for that effort, and that they won't be in a position to move forward at the end of April. In light of that, we have rescinded the 90-day notices that were issued to residents in 1205, 1237, 1325, and 1133. Buildings, but those will be reissued when the Navy's contractor has their work plan further developed. and we'll move forward. At this time, there are a total of 16 households that we had issued 90-day notices to. Three of those households have elected to accept the in-lieu payment, and one post-DDA, post-disposition and development agreement household elected to utilize the relocation benefits to relocate off of the island. But for those households that are planning to relocate on the island, we just have more flexibility in the timing of that. And those that are prepared to move forward, we are going to go ahead and move forward with those relocations as well. The next big milestone for the environmental cleanup program will be for the Navy to complete their supplemental tech memo to the historical radiological assessment. That's a document that they're in the process of preparing, building off of the survey work that was done throughout Site 12 earlier this year, and then the more detailed survey that they did in what is the 1400 series housing, which is the housing on the east side of Avenue B as you go into the residential area. And that's expected to come be issued by the Navy the end of April or early May. Also working with the Navy on the EDC MOA, the Economic Development Conveyance Memorandum Agreement, we met with the Navy in San Diego on February 24th, and I believe that we came to conceptual agreement on language for the EDC MOA. We provided a red line to the Navy last week based on those conversations, and they are in the process of reviewing that. We are also working to finalize the utilities agreement, which is one of the key exhibits to the EDC MOA, and we'll be meeting with the PUC and Navy to review permitting requirements next Wednesday with the hopes of coming to some agreement on language for the utilities agreement. Also report that last week there was a meeting between the city attorney's office, counsel from the Navy, the city and Port of Oakland on the electrical easement that I've discussed in past meetings on former Oakland Army Base property, and I hope to have that agreement finalized to bring to you next month. Also, report that TICD, Treasure Island Community Development, conducted interviews based on the proposals that they received for geotechnical, shoreline, civil, and landscape architectural services to prepare the major phase applications, and they anticipate announcing their selections by the end of this month for those consultant services. And then as Director Richardson mentioned last Friday, the Transportation Authority hosted a commencement ceremony for the ramps project on YBI. The ceremony was actually on Treasure Island, but that project is underway, and a little later in the meeting, Eric Cordoba, the project manager, will make a presentation, and I also wanted to acknowledge that Mike Scott from Parsons Brinkerhoff, who is providing the construction management for the project, is also here and has been doing a great job of getting that project up and running. Myself and often Peter Somerville attend their weekly coordination meetings with the contractor, and things are moving very effectively. So that concludes my report.
Thank you, sir. Just one comment. Thank you again for that report. We know that things are moving. I think for us to stay on message, and I repeat it all the time because sometimes it takes repetitive for people to really get what we are getting into, that we are not dictating to the Navy. The Navy is actually dictating to us as to the cleanup of the island. So for the residents, and I know sometimes it could be very frustrating, however, when the Navy say jump, we have to really do that. And I think as much as we can convey to the residents that we are dealing with a fluid situation, because on one hand, we're putting the Navy's feet to the fire. They must do a thorough cleanup. And on the other time, we have the human elements to protect which sometimes encroach on the cleanup activity itself. But the bottom line is that when you get a call from the Navy and they want to do something because they want to do that, we have to prepare everyone that this is the situation. And that will make our lives easier and their lives easier so that they know that there might be spontaneous action that it could be done because the Navy still owns this island and they must do their cleanup based on their expertise, which us here are not the experts. So I just kind of wanted to incorporate that when we go out in the public, and I know, Mr. Beck, you've been saying that over, but so that we make it a mantra to everyone, anybody responsible, the stakeholders on this project needs to be making that sort of conventions out to folks. And so, but thank you. Any other comment, Mr. Dunlop?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And actually, it's more sort of a question to you if this would be an appropriate time to address Mr. Klein's letter, or because it did deal with some of the relocation.
Yeah, if you say, yes, if I mean, ask the council, Mr. That council, and if you related to his report and his relocation, I think you can direct something, but let's ask the council for something there.
Yeah, Charles Sullivan, City Attorney's Office. I have seen the prior letter. I wasn't here for Mr. Klein's presentation today. I guess I would just reiterate that the notice that was given was to terminate a tenancy at specific premises, not to kick people off the island. We sent the notice. We are relocating tenants, and we are meeting all of the requirements of applicable law in connection with that. All the tenants who will be relocated are not losing their seniority. There's a question about whether or not we were required to follow the procedures in the transition housing rules and regulations, because originally I think that was contemplated for our development work and not necessarily the Navy's remediation. But nonetheless, we are following the transition rules and regulations, and as we are doing that, we are complying with all the requirements of law. So we stand by those notices, and I know that they've been revoked now for an alternative reason, but when the Navy is ready to proceed, we're going to send the new notices. And I emphasize, again, it's a notice of termination at specific premises, not a notice of termination like you must get off the island.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Payson?
Yes, Mr. Beck, I was wondering if you would just remind me and also the public as well, what are the future milestones in the Navy's cleanup on Treasure Island? What are the next steps that will be coming?
Yeah, and that actually maybe is a good subject for me to make or either myself or the Navy to give a larger update on at the next board meeting when we're on island. But the next steps, the Navy has a number of active remediation projects on island at this time. Those include Site 27, which is in the Marina Cove, where they've largely completed their work, but they have additional documentation to do. The immediate steps that will influence the transfer of property, which we again anticipate will happen before the end of this year, are that the Navy does need to complete the supplemental tech memo that I mentioned. And again, we anticipate that to be issued by them late April or early May. That will serve as a supplement to the original historical radiological assessment that was done and issued in 2004, and reflects the findings that were made in solid waste disposal area A and B when excavation work was done there in 2006-2007, as well as the recent survey work, and will lay out the framework for what additional work needs to be completed to address potential radiological issues on the island. With the completion of that document, the Navy needs to issue a new finding of suitability to lease, which again primarily addresses those areas where the the environmental remediation has been complete and covers those lands that the Navy intends to transfer to us before the end of this year. The most recent schedule for that I had discussed with the Navy is that they intended to seek concurrence from the state on the finding of suitability to lease in the August timeframe, which would then allow, again, that transfer to happen before the end of the year. The active remediation sites on the island, I mentioned Site 27. There's Site 21, which is at the southeastern corner of the island, and is largely a petroleum groundwater are the issues there. A lot of the work there has been complete. That is property that will have certain restrictions placed on it in the future in terms of it. The remediation that's been done is suitable for commercial lease, and there will be controls if people are excavating there in the future that they need to do monitoring of the groundwater. That site is expected to be cleared for transfer before the end of 2015. There are, again, moving along the eastern shoreline, there's building 233, which is an area where the Navy has been doing a radiological cleanup related to work that used to happen in that building during the Navy's occupation or operation of the island. Just north of that is Site 24, which is a fairly large site that spans the area between the Job Corps and the eastern shoreline. And that was where the Navy used to have their dry cleaning facilities. So again, it's an area that has a number of groundwater issues that the Navy is remediating. That will be one of the later parcels to be transferred to TIDA. I believe the timing of that is that property won't be available for transfer until the 2018 timeframe. Then there's also Site 2, which is the wastewater treatment plant, Site 6, where they're just developing their work plan for Site 6, and then the largest area and the area that will be the last to be transferred by the Navy is the residential area, Site 12, which occupies most of the northern and a good portion of the western shoreline of the island. And there are a variety of chemical contaminants that need to be cleaned up in Site 12, again, soil, some groundwater, and those will be happening over the next 7 years. The end of 2021 is the time frame that they anticipate transferring Site 12 to the city.
And when the Navy forms its remedial work, does the city have oversight? Is it the state? I'm sure the state has agencies that have oversight as well. Is there testing and sampling that is done just to correlate with the Navy's action?
Yeah, the when the Navy develops a work plan, both the State Department of Toxic Substances Controls, they're the lead agency for all of the cleanup on the island. The State Department of Public Health has a specific area of interest and works very closely with DTSC, but primarily on issues relating to radiation. But the DTSC is the lead agency, both in terms of review and oversight. Also, Regional Water Quality Control Board on issues relating to groundwater or issues that could impact the bay. All of those agencies, as well as TIDA, through our environmental consultants, Treadwell and Rollo, and the developer, through their environmental control consultants, TerraPhase, provide comment on the Navy's work plans, DTSC and CDPH actually provide oversight of activities in the field and monitor the Navy's controls during the course of construction.
Well, I, for one, would appreciate a briefing, and if it's appropriate to do it, as you say, at the next meeting, to have the Navy go into more details to what their actions and plans are for the environmental cleanup. I would appreciate
that. Yeah, I've asked them to provide an update at the next board meeting, and they're trying to make travel arrangements to do that.
Thank you so much.
And piggyback on Commissioner Fixin, I think it's also very important that even with all the timeline and the projections that you made, those are still subject, since you have the regulatory agency, CalDPH and DTSC, and the Regional Water Board, and also San Francisco Department of Public Health is also a partner on this, subject to their findings by those agencies. So even that timeline, we hope we can meet, but it might also be subject to other things that they might have to do. And again, the Navy is working independently. That also, and the next thing we need to be telling folks, so they understand the breadth of the complexity of this cleanup. And as Commissioner Fitzgerald says, the regulatory oversight is very complex. So at the end of the day, the Navy is now working and is working independently. And so I ask all these regulatory agencies, so by the time we get the sign up, we definitely know what we are getting for the city to make the transfer. Thank you, Commissioner Everly.
All the Navy cleanup work does not affect the schedule for developing Yerba Buena Island, does it?
No. At this point, all of the cleanup on Yerba Buena Island has been completed, with the exception of one location, which is an area where there was a fuel storage tank along the northern shoreline of Yerba Buena Island. But the current agreement, the proposed agreement between the city and the Navy would allow for the transfer of Yerba Buena Island again before the end of this year, with the recognition that the Navy does need to complete that one petroleum cleanup project on Yerba Buena even after the transfer from the Navy to us.
So the way things are going now, when would TIDC actually start working Yerba Buena Island?
The current expectation is that TICD would begin work first quarter of 2015, and that's again going to be subject to them preparing their major phase application and the approval by this body of the major phase application for the infrastructure improvements to be made as part of that first phase of construction.
So a year from now.
Sorry?
A year from now.
Yeah, a year from now. A year from now, we should be bringing that information to you.
Well, no, they should be. They'll be starting.
I think the
that's first quarter.
They'll be wrapping it up and moving, you know, getting that approval and moving into construction a year from now.
Well, I'm just trying to, you know, kind of get a projected date of the, quote, groundbreaking, unquote.
Yeah. I'd say late Q1, early Q2 of next year.
Okay. That will remind you, you said that later this year.
Okay.
Okay.
And when does Mr. Cordova?
That's item 10 on our agenda today.
Okay.
Sorry.
So thank you, sir. There are no other commissioners' comments. So, Lorraine?
I'm calling for public comment under item number 3. I have Jeff Klein.
For the record, Jeff Klein, 14-year resident of the Villages, and I thank the board for, again, hearing my comment. It's about the relocation of tenants displaced by the Navy cleanup and our rights under the Uniform Relocation Act and the wrongful waiver and release of the Uniform Relocation Act rights that is attached to the original residential lease. I believe this matter relates to item 3 because it's pertinent to the present displacement of 24 households through the ongoing Navy cleanup. of former Naval Station Treasure Island, specifically the Comprehensive Environmental Response Cleanup and Liability Act Site 12, the housing area, also confusingly referred to as the old bunker area. I wrote a letter to Director Saez on the subject, mistaken and unwarranted preemption of URA benefits for a village's residents, dated March 3rd, a copy of which is in the communications packet, part 1, pages 8 and 9. Apparently, Director Black sent me a letter in response, dated March 7th, but I didn't check the mail today. I hadn't received it as of today, as of 12:30 today. But that letter is included on pages 14 and 15 of the same packet. Now, in that letter, which I've read, Director Black asserts that the package of relocation benefits offered to tenants is in compliance with the California URA, and in fact, so maybe that assertion is moot, maybe moot since the displacing agency is the Navy, and the code of federal regulation should apply. And in any case, my point is that the displacing agency, whether it's the Navy or TIDA, is not adhering to the URA process, for instance, in regards to giving proper notice to tenants of their rights under the URA, as well as other aspects of implementation of relocation of displaced tenants. Furthermore, Director Beck did not address or even mention the larger and longstanding problem of the waiver and release of URA benefits. And I'm quoting from my letter, "The mistaken and unwarranted preemption of URA benefits by the landlord by means of a waiver and release must be signed by all market rate tenants of the villages before they sign the lease. On the face of it, this is itself clearly contrary to Code of Federal Regulations 49, Part 24, Section 24.207F, letter F. No waiver of relocation assistance is the title of that section. A displacing, and I'm quoting, a displacing agency shall not propose or request that a displaced person waive his or her rights or entitlements to relocation assistance and benefits provided by the Uniform Relocation Act and this regulation. And I don't have time to talk about my previous letters to the director in 2006 and 2007 and to the property manager Stone about the revised waiver and release, which is fatally defective, which I refused to sign in 2007, which was revised by Overland, Pacific, and Cutler, now Autotemp. And I can't understand how this waiver of release of benefits, this waiver and release can be consistent with TIDA policy. I just don't understand it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any other public comments? Seeing none. Thank you.
Item number 4, communications from and received by TIDA. There were communications this month and the previous month from, by and large, Recology, Jeff Klein, Villages at Treasure Island, and Community Housing Partnership. There were also several residential advisories, newsletters, and media publications. Calling for public comment under item number 4, I have Jeff Klein.
On communications from and receipt, public comments. Communication?
Pardon?
Okay. Go ahead.
Keep that. Yeah. Continue, please.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Item number 5, ongoing business by Board of Directors.
Again, I attended the groundbreaking, and we're going to, later on the agenda, there will be a presentation on that. It was a fine event put together by San Francisco County Transportation Agency, and we have a representative here today, Mr. Cordova, and there'll be more of comments, presentation on that later. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, also under number 5 is a response to last month's request for information with regards to planned and unplanned outages, tab 5.
Thank you. Okay. Let's move on.
Okay. Calling for public comment under item number 5. Okay. Item number 6, consent agenda. All matters listed here under constitute a consent agenda are considered to be a routine by the authority board and will be acted upon by a single vote of the authority board. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a member of the authority board so requests, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. Item number 6A, approving the minutes of the February 12th, 2014 regular meeting. Calling for public comment under item number 6.
Okay, commissioners, you've read your minutes.
So moved.
Okay, I say motion. And I need a second.
I second.
Okay, by Commissioner Samaya. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. No abstention. Thank you.
Item number 7, resolution approving and authorizing execution of sublease number 809 with the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative, a California nonprofit corporation, Tool Works, a California nonprofit corporation, and Soul Rouge LLC, a California limited liability company, to market and manage the Treasure Island Administration Building for special events.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Board of Directors, Rich Rivetti, Treasure Island Development Authority. You may recall at the February 12th Authority Board meeting, Director of Island Operations reported to you that Project Office staff was in discussions with Tie-Dye Tool Works and Soul Rouge to create a new collaborative to market and manage special events conducted within Building 1. In November 2013, the authority received notice from Wine Valley Catering that it was ceasing its operations, thus dissolving the joint venture between Tie-Dye and Tool Works for managing the authority's event district, which includes the Casa de la Vista, the Chapel, and Building 1. Since 2007, the joint venture has successfully provided job opportunities and job training for homeless and at-risk San Franciscans while maintaining event rentals for the authority. Pursuant to the amended and restated base closure homeless assistance agreement, the Jobs and Equal Opportunity Program described job training and employment opportunities for tie-dye member organizations. Sections 6 and 7 of this agreement identify specific opportunities for tie-dye members who operate social enterprises to be given the right of first offer for economic development opportunities, including catering and temporary property management services. These services cannot be bid outside tie-dye until the good faith process has been satisfied. Although the authority and collaborative could not come together on an agreement of terms satisfactory to all parties concerning the Casa de la Vista and Chapel, project staff believes this arrangement for special events within Building 1 provides acceptable economic opportunities. Under the proposed sublease, the collaborative is requesting to enter into a new month-to-month sublease commencing April 1st, 2014, to market and manage the lobby and mezzanine areas of Building 1 for special events, and with a monthly minimum base fee of $10,000. With that, I have Sherry Williams from Tie-Dye and Brian Kane from Soul Rouge here to discuss some of their programs.
Thank you, Rich. Sherry Williams, Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative, known as Tie-Dye. As you know, we had been in a collaboration with Wine Valley Catering, and it was a fairly sudden decision that they made to cease operations. And I just really want to acknowledge and commend Tie-Dye staff, Rich Rivetti, Jack Nathanson, and of course, Miriam Saez, for stepping right in and figuring out how we could salvage what has been a really great opportunity for people with barriers to employment to re-enter the workforce. Under our collaboration with Wine Valley Catering, over 75 people got on-call jobs, and a lot of them used that to transition to full employment. So we're very excited about this opportunity to work with Brian Kane from Soul Rouge, where he actually is increasing some of his, because he has a more events, we're actually going to be able to have more permanent part-time, permanent full-time positions. So it's actually going to be an even better fit for some of our objectives in terms of really providing lasting and economic opportunities for those at risk. So we're real excited about it. Hopefully you will support it. And I think Brian's here to say a few words as well.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, before Brian gets up, we know Brian as the SF Winery. He's been a contributor to our events for many years now. So the word Soul Rouge, I didn't want to confuse you. It's SF Winery. Brian, one and the same.
Yeah, I'm actually have been on the island now going on 7 years. Soul Rouge is actually my vineyard and winery itself. And we have a number of different companies that operate under it. Most people know the winery San Francisco. And about 2 years ago, we were doing so much event business that we spun off a division called SF event venues, and they manage the properties on the island and a property off the island for different events. And we were really excited that Treasure Island Development Authority and Tie-Dye wanted to continue this important initiative, because one of the things on this island today and in the future is to provide job opportunities to people. And we have done that. As a matter of fact, in 2013, we worked with Tie-Dye and we provided over 3,000 hours to four employees that we have on an ongoing basis through the Tie-Dye program. We have a little different model than Wine Valley Catering, and we hope that this can provide more jobs, not only directly through us, but because we are not a caterer, we work with other catering organizations. And as our preferred caterers, we want to get them involved, and we are trying to get jobs placed with our preferred caterers as part of them working with SF event venues. So we are also working with Toolworks, and they are going to do all the post-event cleaning, which should provide quite a bit of business for them, an additional $70K per year at the very minimum without building one in the equation. And in general, I think what we want to do is provide the basis to provide jobs here on the island with special events today with TIDA and in the future with TICD through the development.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Berlin.
Questions for staff. Building one. So what kind of events will occur there? What will actually happen and about how often?
Generally, sort of over the last 7 years, I mean, it'll be typically the same type of events that we've had. A lot of them are sort of large-scale weddings. We've recently, Make-A-Wish Foundation does their annual event. So there's several, sort of a mixed bag of special events that will occur within Building 1.
Are there corporate events?
There is, yes.
So what, do you have like one a week or two a week? Or?
You know, historically we've had, I want to say we've done probably on average about two a month.
Two a month. So, you know, $10,000 a month is a fairly substantial guarantee. I mean, it's 120,000 years. So I guess the fees that the users are paying are what, $10,000, $20,000 an event?
Well, I mean, it currently it's $4,500 to rent the...
just for the rental.
For Building 1, yes.
Right.
So, under the existing scenario, it's a flat base rent. So TIDA will receive $10,000 per month.
Right.
And Brian.
So that's basically two events at our standard rate.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. If the operator now has three or four, then they'll decide who does the operator now decide how much to charge the users for the event.
They will have that privilege to be able to on certain events discount events when on different seasons, and obviously if there's larger events that use more space, there'll be some price flexibility.
Wait, what do you mean? Like, okay, I'm a corporation. I want to book Building 1 for a corporate party.
Well,
right?
I don't think just because if Google wanted to host their party, I don't think there's going to be a markup because it's Google. I mean, I think it's based on sort of the usage of the facility.
Well, let me finish my question.
Sure.
So it isn't that I, you know, there's $4,500 for the TIDA fee and then whatever for services by the contractor. Instead, now the operator is going to say, okay, the package deal is 20 grand or whatever it is, and here's what you get. You get the space and so on. Something like that?
Well, basically what it is this. They pay TIDA $10,000 per month.
Right.
They manage the facility for us. They market the facility for us.
Right.
They pay for the cleanup. They pay to a staff person to open and close the facility,
right,
which has some economic opportunities for TIDA.
Well, I know. But recalling my wedding reception way back, once upon a time, you know, there was so much to book the house.
Sure.
You paid that. And then there was so much for all the add-ons, you know, the services, the food, the whatever, right? And is that the same kind of pricing structure that will be applied in this case?
Well, I think in this place, and I can have Brian sort of talk about his package, but as I understand it, Brian will, and I'll let Brian actually, he'll explain it better than I can. So Brian, come on up.
So the way that we sell events as SF event venues are in two ways. We either have a flat fee for the venue, or we've done a bunch of packages, and these have been very successful in both corporate and weddings. And what it's done is it's provided a community amongst our preferred vendors, and we all kind of discount our prices a bit to provide a better value for the end customer. And that's one of the ways that we've been able to book, you know, pretty much almost every Saturday and sometimes Sundays at the Winery San Francisco during the wedding season, because it is a great value to the people. So we do have both pricing schemes, a package scheme where you pay per person with a X number of people minimum, or that you just pay a venue fee and take it that way.
Okay. But in any event, TIDA is not getting any percentage rent or anything. We're just hitting the flat amount, and it's, you know, that's the way it is, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yes, so a quick thing here. I think this is money well spent, is consistent with our policy here to provide of job training. As a matter of fact, it might be useful for us to let the city borrow some of the model we have here. I know the demographics of the population that TIDA is dealing with. It's a very, 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 very challenging population. And in as much as we can introduce them to all these varieties of opportunities for events, no matter what the events, they're learning some skills. The city spend far more, 10 times more than what we are spending here for job training, and I don't think they'd spent 3,000 hours for even four. So I think this is consistent, and again, these are the kind of things we need to be conveying to the world out there, what TIDA is doing to partner with our nonprofit and entities to create jobs. I think the broader picture here sometimes is not dollar for dollar, it's where the homeless folks are going to end up. The more we do this kind of things, the better for them. They can even get jobs outside of the island, and so in my opinion, I think, and, you know, Cheryl, TIDA, you guys are already proving to be doing a great job. And the least we can do is even help to put more money when we have, so you can do what you need to do best. Commissioner Dunlop?
Yes, I just was wondering if you could explain the part where it says that although the authority and collaborative could not come to agreement on terms satisfactory to all parties.
Sure. And Sherry's laughing. Basically, under the original joint venture collaborative, if you will, it was for all of our special event district, which includes the CASA and the chapel. And in this case, we tried to come up with some terms that were agreeable to TIDA as well as to the partners of the collaborative. We just couldn't come up with the deal points that, from an economic standpoint, that we felt were in the best interest for TIDA for those other properties. So we are managing the CASA and the chapel internally, if you will, and then we've came up to an agreement with Building One where we feel that this agreement actually works both economically for TIDA and then also for the joint venture and keeping the jobs program and sort of developing that program and keeping that effort moving forward.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Samar.
So I want to go on the record to say that this is a wonderful collaboration, and I'm really happy to see this happen. And I wanted to get back to Brian's comment about, and I'm happy that you're doing things to find ways to employ more people. And you said that there would be a difference between how you're doing it now or how you propose to do it, and how the Napa Valley Catering did it before.
Wine Valley Catering.
I'm sorry, Wine Valley Catering. Could you just talk a little bit, you know, about how you would see yourself providing more jobs? I mean, it's wonderful how you're doing it, but tell us more about how you propose to do something like that.
Okay. So one of the ways that we operate a little bit differently than Wine Valley Catering is, since we don't provide the catering, first of all, we've been much more successful in getting more rentals than they have overall, because we partner with the caterers that are appropriate for what the customer needs as their food. So overall, I think we're going to do more. Last year, they did 11 large events in Building One. I think we can do much more than that, and that's why we've agreed to pay the price that we have per month. The other way that we first of all, more events, more people. We are bringing Winery SF into the fold. So not, we have been providing jobs for tie-dye folks, but not on a formal basis. So now we're formally committing to providing jobs in the area of event setup, management, and tear down and cleanup through an official agreement with Toolworks and an official agreement with tie-dye to bring on X number of people ourselves. So that's the other way. And just to give you an idea, the Winery San Francisco did 59 events last year. So we do have quite a bit more opportunities for jobs and to employ people not only in these roles but long term. And then lastly, by, I hate to say requiring, but by highly incentivizing our preferred vendors to also bring on tie-dye people. These are the people that we've worked with very successfully moving forward. We want them to now employ tie-dye people. So we feel that we can place a number of people through their organizations as well. So it's kind of like if they want to work with us, they agree with our model, and we would like them to, you know, entertain the fact of interviewing tie-dye people when they have positions available for caterers and servers.
Thank you very much again. So let's, I think, questions here. Let's, I think this is a great program. We said that. Do we need to have public comments? Okay, so I'm going to have public comments on this item, please, and then we'll take a vote. Okay. I do not see any public comments. So, Commissioner?
I move the item.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. And all in favor?
Aye.
On the ayes have it. And thank you again,
thank you,
staff, for this wonderful program. Next.
Item number 8, authorizing the Director of Island Operations to execute a grant agreement with the Treasure Island Museum Association, a California nonprofit organization.
Good afternoon, Directors. For the record, Peter Somerville, Treasure Island Development Authority staff. The item in front of the board today seeks approval to execute a grant agreement with the Treasure Island Museum Association, specific for the purpose of funding the TEMA exhibit, Wish You Were Here, Postcards from the Golden Gate International Exposition. I'm going to give some background on the grant agreement itself and then ask TEMA to come up to speak to the exhibit itself. A couple of months ago, the authority received a grant request from TEMA to assist in funding of the production, exhibition, and promotion of this exhibit. The grant agreement will be administered through the city's standard G100 grant agreement form, which is attached to this item. As TEMA expends money or has the need to expend money for the specifics of the exhibit as highlighted in the grant plan, they will make a request to TIDA, who will then facilitate providing them that revenue. The grant is capped at $9,900. We have been working with TEMA to assure that they are in compliance with all the city vendor requirements, contract monitoring, and things like that. Obviously, staff is supportive of this proposal. I think over the last several years, we've seen TEMA certainly mature from you know, an organization who is primarily just concerned with rightfully making sure that the Treasure Island Museum collection would find a good home to, I think, one of, you know, one of the best nonprofits that we work with on the item, on the island. They certainly do a lot of work in historic preservation. They've been able to successfully host several events over the last several years, including a regular lecture series. Attendance at the annual History Expo, and I think they've we all agree that they've been a great partner to the authority, filling some of the gaps that staff isn't able to address with regards to historical programming. So at this point, I will invite Ann Schneblin from the Museum Association up to say a few words, and I will be available after that if there's any questions on the grant itself.
Thank you very much.
I'm Ann Schneblin, Vice President of the Treasure Island Museum Association. I want to thank President Richardson, Mr. Dunlop, and Director Saez, and Peter Somerville for very kind comments. This exhibit that we're putting up now is really part of a what has become a several-month-long tribute to the 75th anniversary of the Golden Gate International Exposition. In fact, we have some ribbons, and I will put them on the table in case you would like to take one. Since we returned to Building 1 in June of 2008, the Treasure Island Museum Association has made tremendous strides in on-island activities. We've produced several history days and special events, including our recent and very successful standing room only Golden Gate International Exposition 75th anniversary celebration. We have participated regularly and by invitation in the Treasure Island Flea Market and the Dragon Boat Festival as the only exhibitor representing the history and culture of Treasure Island. We produced a successful free public lecture series featuring outstanding scholars, 1 year and continuing. We continue to offer exhibitions in the lobby and in room 111 of our beautiful Building 1. We offer frequent and well-attended walking tours. We are also recognized beyond the island. For the last 4 years in early March, we have represented the island at the San Francisco History Expo at the Old Mint, an event attracting scores of exhibitors and thousands of visitors. For 2 years running, our invited speakers to the Mint have attracted standing room only audiences. We have installed 2 exhibitions in the main branch of the San Francisco Public Library. And we have received 2 2014 Art Deco Society Preservation Awards. We've grown as an organization this past year. We've added board and committee capacity. We've engaged in collaborations with the students at the Academy of Art University, who have produced 9 videos for us about Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island. And Presidio Graduate School students have drawn up a marketing plan for us. Partnering with island organizations, we have produced events in the winery, we are working with interns from the Job Corps, and we have cooperation from island organizations during our walking tours. Volunteers from other organizations and residents on the island work with us on a regular basis. And a volunteer from Swords to Plowshares, who helped us out a few years ago, is now an officer on our board. We could not have accomplished these things without the support that this board and our staff and the staff have given us, including the office and exhibit space that we are privileged to occupy in Building 1. We are now on the threshold of 3 more milestones. The inauguration of the winery gallery with the exhibition you are considering today, that is the postcards exhibition, and the first on-island exhibition of objects from the original Treasure Island Museum collection since the museum closed in 1997. And we announce here for the first time in public that the Treasure Island Museum Association will celebrate our increased capabilities by resuming operation under the name Treasure Island Museum. These milestones will all be realized with the opening of the exhibition, Wish You Were Here. We hope you will all attend the opening lecture and reception on May 17th. We are deeply grateful for your consideration of this support for our exhibition and for all your support through the years. And you each have a postcard for the exhibition opening in May, as well as the brochure for our lecture series. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and congratulations, Anne. And as we stated here, I know, speaking for myself on this commission, I've seen your work. You've hung in there with us, and you represent a great partnership that as we move along, we must also make sure we carry the museum along, because what you have is basically the other part of the history of this great place that must be showcased for everyone to enjoy.
Thank you.
Recently, also, as part of the history, I was out in the Jewish center and ran into a gentleman, mm-hmm. Mr. Richard Rosenberg, who, very well known in the Bay Area, was also a Navy, you know, was in the Navy. These are the kind of people we need to capture in the history as we move along, so that generations of San Franciscans and those that are served at one point there are also part of this elaborate history that you are doing. So I think you are doing an excellent job here. The
Thank
other
you.
Thing is that all this series, I know you have this newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also sending out releases to the news organization? Because it would be really great when right now, Google on Treasure Island, that people can pick up a lot of these things that are happening that can really see. So it's just an idea that I want to give to you, that the flyer is great, but using the, all the other social and digital media and electronic to make sure that all these things are captured. Again, we like to really see that, you know, moving on.
If we can find a way, I don't know exactly how we would contact Google, but I'd certainly love to do that. We use social media a lot, and we do press releases. And
thank you very much. And commissioners, any comments on this? None at this point. Can we have public comments? Okay. No public comments, commissioners. Let's act on this item.
I'll move it.
Commissioner Dunlop and Commissioner Samara, and all in favor here?
Aye.
Aye. I moved it. Thank you again. So let's move on to the next agenda quickly.
Item number 9, resolution authorizing the second amendment to the contract with Paragon Partners for consulting and advisory services in connection with the implementation of the transition housing rules and regulations for the Treasure Island Yerba Buena Island Development Project by amending the scope of services, extending the term through June 30, 2015, and increasing the not-to-exceed contract amount to $161,536.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the board. I think you're all familiar with Paragon Partners. They were originally brought on with TIDA to help develop procedures for implementing the transitional housing rules and regulations. Under Amendment 1, the term of the contract was extended to June 30th of this year, and the value of the contract increased in anticipation that the relocations from YBI would happen during this fiscal year, but that has not occurred. But instead, we have had to deal with the relocations that were requested by the Navy to facilitate their cleanups. So this amendment is intended to increase the value of the contract in recognition of the additional moves that have occurred this year, and to extend the term of the contract through June 30th of next year in anticipation that the YBI relocations will occur during that time frame, and that Paragon can assist us with those relocations when they do occur.
Thank you. So it's an ongoing business. So commissioners, any comments that this is part of our work plan and the transition, which we still need to keep going given all the things that are happening on the island? So moved by.
Just to say it, we know them well, mm-hmm. and I've heard nothing but positive.
Okay. So will you cast a motion?
Do we need?
Okay, so we need to have public comments and then. Okay, any public comments on this item, please? None?
I'll move it.
Okay, Commissioner Dunlop.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Fessend. And calling the question now, all in favor?
Aye.
I think we have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Item number 10, informational presentation on status of I-80 YBI Yerba Buena Island westbound ramps project.
President Richardson, directors Eric Cordoba, project manager YBI ramps. Happy to be here. It's been some time. Want to give you an update on the project. Just a little bit project overview. The project is to reconstruct the westbound on and off ramps. As you see them depicted in the color blue is a new off ramp that we're going to construct. And the color orange is the new on ramp that we will construct on the east side of the island. And we'll also do improvements on McKellar Road. This project is separate and independent of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge project, but as you know, we're going to connect. That's ultimately is build new ramps that connect to the Bay Bridge structure. Good news is that the construction phase is 100% funded with federal highway bridge program and state Proposition 1B seismic retrofit funds. Just over the last year, it's been a busy year in 2013. In the spring, we gained approval of the plan specifications and estimates and also the right-of-way certification. We obtained construction funding approval in July of 2013, executed the appropriate agreements with TIDA. Thank you, Charles Sullivan and Bob, for all your hard work on the agreements. And then we also entered into a construction management contract with the Parsons Brinkerhoff construction management firm, and Mike Scott is the construction manager for the project. and he's here today if we want to answer any questions. He's living and breathing this project day by day here on the island. And the offices are located there here on the island, so thank you for allowing us to locate here our construction management team. Transportation Authority is administering the construction contract with Caltrans and TIDA oversight. We have awarded a contract to Golden State Bridge in December 2013. But I do want to give you a brief overview of that process because it was an important one for the Transportation Authority. We issued an invitation for bids in the September timeframe of 2013. We did what we thought was massive outreach to 14 builder exchanges, to RAND Legal Ads in San Francisco and the Chronicle, newspapers, multiple minority and industry publications, had a mandatory pre-bid meeting in September to make sure that the prime bidders understood our goals, and in particular the 12.5% disadvantaged business enterprise goal. This is federally funded, so we had to follow federal requirements in that regard in terms of analyzing what the appropriate goal should be. We had a bid opening on November 5th, and the good news was that we had three bids that all came in under the engineer's estimate. And as you can see, the respective three companies that bid the project with their respective DBE commitments. As we analyzed all three bids, federal regulations require that if a DBE goal is not met, that the low bidder must demonstrate adequate good faith effort. We went ahead and reviewed the good faith effort review documentation, had a reconsideration meeting hearing with Walsh Construction at that time, who was the apparent low bidder. After reviewing all the facts and with conferring with legal counsel and with Caltrans and FHWA, we deemed that Walsh Construction was non-responsive, and in accordance with the Local Agency Public Construction Act, we went ahead and made a recommendation to our board to award the contract to Golden State Bridge, who was the second but the lowest responsible and responsive bidder. And at that time, we did go to our board in December and obtained approval and executed a contract with Golden State Bridge. I do want to talk about Golden State Bridge because they exceeded our DBE goals. There's a description of the different ethnic backgrounds and this base homes of the construction companies that are subs, 13 DBE firms. Here's a listing of all the firms, some of them here located on the island. So we're moving forward with construction, as Bob indicated. And when we did go to our board, we went with the contractor bid of over $49 million. And we have supplemental work budget, state agency furnished materials for a subtotal of over $53 million. And with a construction contingency of 20%, we requested all this and have approval from Caltrans and FHWA for an allocation of over $63 million to construct the project. And the good news is the work started. It started in January. You probably have seen the tree cutting activities. We're getting ready to really start to build some of the detour roads. It's 550 working days, which translates to about 2.5 years worth of work. The upcoming key milestones that you'll notice on the island here shortly are the construction of what's called the McCalla and Forest Road detours this summer, as well as the relocation of Quarters 10 from where it stands right now in the hairpin turn area at Northgate and McCalla Road, and we're going to relocate it to the Clipper Cove area. This is just a pictorial of actually the finished product with the new ramps when a photo simulation, but the areas that you see in yellow there are the detour roads that I just referenced. Those detour roads were mandated by the U.S. Coast Guard for us to construct as part of our project to make sure that they always had adequate access to and from their base. And as you know, Caltrans is still working on the Bay Bridge. There's a lot of activity on the island. So these roads are critical in terms of continuing access for the Coast Guard and for the construction efforts for both Caltrans and the Transportation Authority. And there's a picture of Quarters 10. It's deemed a historic structure. I'm not sure if you knew that. And it is being relocated to the Clipper Cove area. You'll see that happen over the next few months in the spring and summer. Then you mentioned the commencement ceremony. Thank you, President Richardson, for attending, for your kind words. It was quite an event, a significant milestone for everyone here. It's been a pleasure to be a partner here with TIDA here, the staff, in particular Bob Beck, Peter Somerville, also working with Rich Rivetti. and all the staff here, thank you very much. And we look forward to giving you updates at your pleasure when you need them, want them, and need, you know, make sure that we have advisories out so that the public is advised of the traffic switches that may occur here over the next couple of years. And I'm open to questions. Thank you,
sir, for that presentation. And as I mentioned earlier, that you gave that historical partnership, which was very excellent. And I think, again, it's something that we may need to revisit early on to share with folks. I think what I saw were very impressive. You mentioned about the minority goals, and you've listed here. I think that's what TIDA would like to see in the city and county of San Francisco. So whatever you are doing there, you're very mindful that we need to diversify, make sure that everybody get their fair share. And one of the things that's also significant is that the ad to the legal and main newspapers and also to the minority publication is something that we need to enforce. Everything we do, yes, we should utilize those minority and the legal, you know, papers, San Francisco Chronicle, Examiner, and also the neighborhood papers. I think even that even constitute to some of the minorities and everybody getting their fair share. It's really great because then people will get an idea of what it is we're trying to do here. So what I see is really great, and thank you for your past and ongoing work on all this. And our partnership with the San Francisco County Authority, I think you're one of the fine city agencies. Thank you, sir. Commissioner Dunlop.
Yeah, I guess first I'd just like to echo what you said about notices in minority papers and disadvantaged communities. I did have, like, for first I was just kind of curious, why is Building 10 historic? I mean, it's interesting, but I don't know why it's
historic.
Yeah,
the actual rounded structure there with the glass was unique in that character. I'm not a historian by any means, but when they did study it, that was deemed historic. And in that regard, we could not demolish it, so we had to preserve it, and we preserved it now and are going to relocate it to the Clipper Cove area. We think it's going to look really nice there, and some of the paths that will be built there, it's going to be a nice setting.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. Then I was also, then as far as the sort of the temporary detour, there's been a lot of concern with the neighbors about the usage of the detour roads, and so it will only be the Navy that's using that? It won't be construction vehicles or what have you?
There will be access to the construction vehicles. It's not going to be like they're not going to be used full time. They'll be used only when we have to close McCullough Road in particular, for example, when we're moving quarters 10 down McCullough Road, down the hill and around the corner to the Clipper Cove area. That's going to be a very slow operation, bringing the building up and putting it on basically flatbed type trucks, special equipment, and very slowly moving it down from what I'm told will take a day or two. And so there will have to be some closures on McCullough Road in that regard. Then the detours will come into effect.
And then the residents there will be able to use the detours,
yes.
I assume?
Yes, they will.
Okay. And then just wondering about how the hummingbirds are doing.
Yes, they are nesting, and we are protecting them and complying with all the federal environmental regulations. But as they fledge, we go ahead and remove trees as we're allowed to and continue with construction.
There's special, the rules or whatever,
yes,
for the hummingbirds.
Yes.
Thank you. And Mr. Cordova, before you,
thank you,
leave, I know that we've also, this commission is going to put equal weight to water transportation. I know that's not specifically with the ramp, but now thinking of the broader picture of the transportation requirements and needs of the island, since we're strategically located, I think later on we'd like to see more of you here. So something to bear in mind that we also highly are interested in that type of transportation, so that getting that out of the island is an experience that will help to facilitate that development. And at this point, I'd like to ask public comments on Mr. Cordova's presentation. And seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Item number 11, discussion of future agenda items by directors.
Commissioners?
No.
None? Okay, so we're meeting. Oh, fantastic. So again, thank you all for your time here. It's been a wonderful meeting, and to my commissioners and everyone, let's keep working hard.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Where we go? Like a mug or something?
Very nice. Thank you for a nice meeting.
Different today.